Seasonal employers scramble to fill summer jobs and find it particularly difficult this year. Year after year, it's difficult for many of Maine's seasonal businesses to fill all the part-time and temporary job openings they have. But this year may be the toughest yet. Maine's unemployment rate is down to 3.2%. Officials still don't know how many foreign workers will be allowed to come to Maine under various visa programs, but it may be very limited. Add to the mix that Maine's tourism industry has been growing over the years, which means even more jobs to fill. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're going to discuss the summer job market. What are some creative ideas for employers who find themselves in a bind? What does this mean for teenagers and college students? And if employers can't find enough workers, what are the broader implications? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. With summer fast and finally approaching, many of Maine's businesses are on the hunt for part-time and temporary help. But Maine's unemployment rate is low, and the need for help is high. Today we're going to discuss why there is a shortage of summer help and what steps can be taken to help address it. In the studio with me, Julie Rabinowitz. She is Director of Policy Operations and Communications for the Maine Department of Labor. Chris Fogg is here. He's Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Tourism Association. And Greg Dougal is Executive Director for the Maine Innkeepers Association. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you think can be done to bring in part-time workers to help Maine's tourism industry, agriculture, too? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. Julie, I'll start with you. Give us some numbers. How many more jobs are there in Maine in the summertime, and how many people are here to help fill them?
Hi, thanks for having me. Maine has the second highest seasonal swing of employment in the nation, and we're second only to Alaska. So we have a net increase of 38,000 approximately jobs every summer. And what we mean by net is, schools are closed for the summer, the ski resorts are closed in the summer. So there's some employers, particularly the school systems, that are huge employers. And when we count that those jobs like cafeteria workers and ed techs go away in the summer, we still have an increase of 38,000 jobs. So summer tourism and the summer season is incredibly important.
And 38,000 jobs, Maine's unemployment rate is it 3.2%?
3.2 for February.
So what does that mean? How many people are looking for a job in Maine?
Well, we have about 23,000 people who are actively seeking work, and that's who we count as that 3.2%.
So even if some magic happened and we could magically transport everyone who is looking for a job to a place that had a job open, we still wouldn't have enough.
Right. And so this means it's great opportunities for teens and people who might be looking to take on a part-time job, retirees who want to do something to earn a little money on the side, but especially for people who have been underemployed or for whatever reason, whether it was the recession or other reasons, have taken a step out of the job market.
Chris, part of the issue, you're executive officer of Maine Tourism Association. Part of the issue, isn't it, is the Maine tourism industry has done so well.
Yeah.
And there's so many more jobs than there used to be.
Yeah, we've had exceptional growth over the last 8 years. And last year was incredible. We were up 6% in direct expenditures. So we're up 6% in the amount of people that were coming to Maine. We went to 36 million people came for a vacation in Maine last year. And right now, the tourism industry represents about 106,000 jobs. And that's one of every six jobs here in the state of Maine is a job in the tourism industry. And so as the industry continues to grow, Maine becomes more popular. Having a shortage of workers definitely presents a problem.
Greg Dougal, what are you hearing from the innkeepers, the Maine Innkeepers Association? Is right now the time that they're doing their summer hiring, and what's happening on the ground?
Yes, and I just want to set the record straight that I am the director of government affairs because I did change positions just a little while back. And I do represent the Maine Restaurant Association as well. But yes, obviously people are, you know, quite frankly, the process of employment for seasonal employers is something that actually happens, should be happening year round. And quite frankly, those people that are the most successful are ones that are starting in the fall, looking to the subsequent year. A lot of times seasonal workers on visas have been part of that equation, and they will continue to be so. But I'm sure that you've heard that there is an issue with the seasonal visas that there are probably somewhere around 8,000 people who come on seasonal visas. And we're probably right now about 2,000 light on the H-2B visa side. So it's going to create a set of challenges moving forward. But most everybody who is not involved in that process, which is most employers, you know, has been looking for people up to this point and advertising for quite some time.
I want to talk about that because I know Maine's whole congressional delegation is going to bat for expanding the H-2B visa program and other visa programs. But it's tricky, isn't it? So it's been frozen. All the visa applications are full, filled up by states like Florida, but we're appealing it or hoping for a change in the law. Bring us up to speed on where we are with that.
Well, the visa program generally allows for 66,000 people. They're split between the first half of the federal fiscal year and the second half of the federal fiscal year. So that's 33,000 per time frame. So we do get it wasn't always that way, but we fought to get it that way. So we do get a little bit of an advantage there. Last year we had what's called a returning worker visa exemption. And what that basically does is allow people to come back and not count against the cap. They can do so generally for 3 years. We've had it at periods of time. We haven't had it at periods of time. It was on the appropriations bill last year, so it actually was available to us. There were 119,000 visas that were actually used last year. So to give you an idea of the magnitude of this just nationwide, there were 90% more requests for visa employees, and it'll result in 50% less that are actually filled. So it's almost like 140% swing of people that want visas and those that will get them because we have, you know, almost half as many visas nationwide as last year.
Julie, do you see employers who maybe traditionally use the visa program or depended on young people who aren't in their communities anymore looking to different groups of people that having to be creative about where they're trying to find their summer help?
Yes, and I think part of it is due to the fact that the recovery that we've had coming out of the recession really tightened up and accelerated tremendously in 2015 and 2016. So the year-round payroll jobs, we have met full recovery, and particularly when we look at exclusively the private sector jobs, we are now at an all-time record high of private sector jobs. So as the year-round employment in those private sector jobs has brought more people to full-time year-round employment, that puts increasing pressure on our seasonal employers. So the seasonal employers have to think outside the box and really think about not only retaining their workers they had the prior season and making sure that they come back, but also thinking about where they're going to find the new pools of workers. Because at the same time, this labor market has tightened, as Chris just talked about, tourism's way up. So that puts another pressure on these employers to find enough people to serve those clients.
I know traditionally some of the big resorts have almost built dorms for their workers and their workers who come from other countries. Is anyone trying to, instead of recruiting from other countries, look to within different parts of the state of Maine or New England? That go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I've had a member that told me that they found a pocket of workers in Millbridge, and they're in the Bar Harbor area, and they decided to buy a van and give those folks that van to commute back and forth every day so they could come in and service some of the rooms. So I think people are getting or being forced to be creative about how they fill their positions. I talked to another employer that started much earlier, as Greg said, reaching out to college students through Skype interviews, through social media has become a bigger tool in recruiting people and recruiting them earlier. And I think there's no silver bullet on the horizon to solve this problem. It really is, as we talked to our members on there's a mix of ways for them to find employees, whether it's H2B or finding locals or finding some other different way of doing it. It's going to take a mix to solve this issue.
Greg, do you have members, innkeepers or restaurants who say, we're either not going to open this summer, we're not going to open our entire establishment, we haven't quite figured it out yet? What is this going to have some sort of direct impact?
Probably it will. What I'd like to say, too, though, is on the visa program, there's a basic misconception that out there that you're providing jobs to people, you know, other than Americans or other than Mainers. And, you know, a good way, the example I always use is Algonquin. There are 1,000 people who live in Algonquin year-round. There are 2,000 hotel rooms and 2,500 restaurant seats. So even if every able-bodied individual 3-month-old to 88-year-old in that community were to work in the industry, they would be woefully short. So there really is. It's a geographic issue. It's a numbers issue. And I'm sorry, I forgot your question.
Oh, that's why I was wondering when I asked about dorms or something like that. Yeah. You know, as Julie will tell you, yes, Algonquin doesn't have very many people, and York County has a very low unemployment rate. But there are other counties in Maine that have a much higher unemployment rate. And, you know, is there a move to try to find some way? I know it's not the full-time permanent job that many people in certain parts of Maine want to have, but at least on a short-term measure, is there a way of trying to, you know, give some people some meaningful income for the season?
Well, and I think Chris sort of touched on it. You know, I've been in the hospitality industry before. I was in it for very many years in a seasonal application to some degree. We were year round, but we were very busy in the season. And that appropriate mix of locals, seniors, college students, high school students, you know, potential visa people, like Chris was saying, is the most important thing to do. So you need to have a strategy ahead of time to be able to combat this, because if you're trying to fix the problem now, you're not going to be able to do it. And I will tell you that housing is one of the biggest issues. Transportation is too, because you get people that come from other places and they don't necessarily have the transportation. Maine's not known for its public transportation. So you might have people in Sanford or, as Chris said, in Millbridge that want to get somewhere, but they truly can't. And then the same issues revolve around housing, because it's very expensive to find
especially places like
out.
Bar Harbor or Algonquin. They're very expensive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are buying houses now to use for Airbnb.
Right.
And so that's put another damper on us being able to have that housing option.
So, Julie, you look at this sort of big picture broadly. Where do we go long term if this trend continues?
Well, this trend is a trend that's been years in the making, because it's part of the way our workforce has been structured. We just didn't have enough babies in the 90s to supply a larger workforce. So as our workforce ages, it's really important that we look at ways to recruit younger families and younger people here so that we grow our own workforce and don't have to import them from other places to the extent that it may increasingly need to be that way. So initiatives like Live and Work in Maine, which looks at promoting Maine, is a really important tool. But it's also things like, what can we do to get people to live and work in Maine this summer? College kids coming here from other states to rent a house as a group and have a great experience on the Maine coast, living together, working at various places, and have the opportunity to make a lot of money in a short period of time, working even two jobs.
Chris, are there areas of the state where this is more of an issue than others? Greg mentioned Algonquin. Do we see the same issue in sort of the Belgrade Lakes region and the Maine side of the White Mountains, or are we seeing this really in the coastal communities?
I think it's all over the state. There is a big concentration on the coast, but it really does come, as Greg said, comes down to housing. And as he mentioned, Airbnb and HomeAway and the weekly rentals component of things has changed the game, because a lot of people are coming up and they visited, say, Booth Bay or wherever, and they want to buy a house. And so they buy a house there and they come for a couple of weeks and then they rent it out on Airbnb. And so that some of those houses used to be available for seasonal employee housing, and they're just not there anymore. We hear stories of some motels, some folks, some bigger properties buying small motels and turning them into seasonal employee housing. But that's the we talked to some of our counterparts in Florida, in Mississippi, Louisiana, saying, you probably have a glut of workers during the summertime when we're most busy. But the equation comes back to where do you put these folks and how do you house them and how do you provide that transportation?
So what do you do? These trends are probably not going to reverse. We certainly don't want tourism to go down in Maine. We don't want that in it. And I believe that Airbnb and VRBO are here to stay. It's now part of the culture. So what do we do?
I guess that's my question. And I think I do remember what your question was. There aren't a lot of people that aren't going to open or, you know, there may be people that open later. There may be people that close earlier, and that did occur to some degree last year on the close earlier side. But there are some people that will just reduce the amount of inventory they may have, like the number of hours that they operate, or even like the number of rooms that they may put out initially. I know there is a place in Ogunquit that's already gone down that road to do that. So, but they're minor adjustments. They're not like major wholesale adjustments, like not opening at all or anything like that. I mean, I think we'll be able to resolve that.
And I'd say that tourism folks are pretty resilient. They face a lot of changing situations. And so a lot of workers are learning multiple tasks within an operation. So they work the front desk and they maybe are concierge. Whatever it is, I think they're pretty resilient and they'll find a way. Like Greg said, I don't think anyone's going to close for the season. They may shorten hours, but they'll find a way to do more with less for now. But I think as we look out, where are we going to be in 5 to 10 years? I think we have to start thinking about some creative ways of solving some of this.
And I'm going to steal Julie's thunder because this really truly is what I tell everybody who calls me that's a member, and that's to sign up with the career centers to be a recognized employer. And then also I think it must be a record number of job fairs, but I'll leave that to her.
Yeah.
But our people participate in those all the time.
Okay, tell me about the job fairs, Julie.
So we have had tremendous interest in the job fairs from employers, and we are at a record number of job fairs this year. I think there's about 20 just in April all over the state. We, the Lewiston, Portland, Augusta Career Centers have them monthly. York County had a huge one yesterday, Lewiston had one this morning, a huge one at the community college. We have them in places that usually have not seen a lot of job fairs. Rockland is coming up in April. Skowhegan is having a job fair in April. We have Presque Isle has a job fair in April. Callis has a job fair in April. Machias has a job fair in May. They are all over the state, and there are dozens of employers to hundreds of employers at these job fairs.
So where can one find – we will put it on our Facebook page, but where can one find a list of these job fairs?
You can go to mainecareercenter.gov, and you can click the link for job fairs, and there's a whole list, and they are updated frequently. And usually, if the staff are – doing what we need them to do, they're posting the employers every day that sign up. And so you can see multiple employers and think about what their jobs they're offering. You can look up the jobs on the main job link. You can sometimes see their jobs posted on their own company webpage or their Facebook page. And you can do research about the company and the positions. There's thousands of jobs available in the state right now.
On that note, we are going to take a quick break. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Cross Jewelers, Maine Coastal Casual Collection, designed for everyday wear, now on display upstairs on Congress Street, Portland, or at crossjewelers.com.
What makes us speak up?
Moral conviction. We are, as human beings, moral beings. We believe in principles. We are driven by values.
Even when
we're going to suffer a lot of punishment and backlash for doing so.
I'm Guy Raz, speaking up next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us Saturday at 1 o'clock with a rebroadcast, Wednesday evening at 11 o'clock.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, Alec Baldwin talks about creating his Donald Trump impression for Saturday Night Live and talks about his life and career. Also, punk rocker Laura Jane Grace talks about how transitioning from male to female affected her music, her fans, her daughter, and her own identity. Grace is the founder of the band Against Me. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air Weekend coming up Sunday evening at 7 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a looming labor shortage, particularly for part-time and temporary workers this summer. In the studio with me, Chris Fogg, Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Tourism Association. Julie Rabinowitz is Director of Policy, Operations, and Communication for the Maine Department of Labor. Greg Dougal is Director of Government Affairs with the Maine Innkeepers Association. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, James Mile. He's a policy analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. James, thanks so much for calling in today.
Sure, no problem. Hi, Jennifer.
What does MESAP see as some of the reasons for the state seasonal labor shortage?
Well, I think I heard your guest touching on a lot of different topics. I think the I think one of the things that we like to do is kind of look at sort of the bigger picture of the economy and economic policy in Maine. So I would say that while there are sort of some shorter term things like the impact on the seasonal visa program, I'd really sort of draw your listeners' attention to some of the changing things we've just seen in the structure of the workforce in Maine. And I think, you know, one of the things that we look at that kind of concerns us is a metric that economists call the labor force participation rate, which is kind of a measure of how many people in the economy are looking for work or are either employed or looking for work. And Maine is at a low point in terms of the percentage of people looking for or in that labor force. And that's not just a phenomenon that it's occurring because of our aging population. You can actually see that if you compare sort of between 2008 and the beginning of the recession and 2015 or even today when we've got some of the more recent data, you'll see folks who we tend to think of as seniors are actually more likely to be working now than they were then, because I'm sure a lot of us know folks who are technically at retirement age but, you know, have never found themselves more busy than when they're actually supposed to be retired. But if you look at sort of the proportion of especially middle-aged men in rural parts of the state who are in that sort of prime working age of like 35 to 55, people in that group sort of for reasons that we don't entirely understand are somehow choosing not to work or probably most likely unable to work or participate in the labor force. So we have some folks in Maine who are sort of being let down, I would say, by the structure of the economy in general.
So, James, what would your advice be for the folks in front of me with the Innkeepers Association, the Tourism Association, or the legislature to try to correct this and get the employees needed for the seasonal businesses?
I mean, I think the sort of all of the above strategy that some of your guests sort of have been discussing and touching on makes a lot of sense, especially sort of in the short term for those employers who are looking to get workers. But I think it's also something that needs to apply to lawmakers and policymakers as well. You know, we need to be building an economy that is going to attract more young families to come and live and work in Maine. I think the organization with that name does a great job about advertising the state, but I think we also just need to do a good job sort of building an economy where more people are going to come here because it's an attractive place to live and it's a place where they can make a comfortable living. And I also think it's we need to be doing as much as we can to sort of help those people who are living in the state and who, for whatever reason, may not be able to, might be quite willing, quite able to work but, or eager to work but unable to do so for different reasons. You know, we know that the main reason that people say that they are not able to work is because of sickness and disability. So, you know, you've got healthcare, you've got education, and you've got a number of things. You know, we talked about transportation earlier, making sure that Maine has an adequate transportation system and people have access to that so that they can address some of these labor imbalances in the state as well. So really, it touches on all the different tools that state lawmakers have at their disposal. There's a number of different things they could do to make sure the economy is one that works for everyone.
All right. And I should mention that we're going to do a program on trying to attract more young people to the state and the Live and Work Maine movement in just a couple weeks here on Maine Calling. James Mile, thanks so much for calling in. James Mile, a policy analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Going to the another phone call. This is Ralph in Belgrade. Hi, Ralph. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Hello. How are you? Yes. Calling about the pay scale. I'm sure it's been very low over the years, and maybe need to start to pay a higher wage to compete and spread some money around. You know, if the pay is higher, people will come. And maybe a little bit of a benefit to that. Okay, I'll listen on. Thank you.
Ralph, thanks for the point. I mean, he's not the only one to make. Maybe if inns and restaurants paid more, more people would want to work there.
Well, I think you'll find that our industry actually does pay very competitive wages. And I'll tell you the reason why is for the very discussion that we're having. You know, you're not going to get people to work for you if you don't pay them a reasonable wage. Obviously, the minimum wage in Maine has been increased by referendum, and that's going to continue to grow over time. And certainly, it's not just the people that come into work at minimum wage that see adjustments generally when there's a minimum wage increase. It is adjusted above that as well. There are limitations when you look at smaller employers. You know, a hotel or a large restaurant has a lot more, you know, things at their disposal to be able to help that issue than maybe somebody who has a small takeout on Peaks Island or something like that for the summer. So I'll turn it over to one of these guys.
Well, excuse me. Wages are rising in Maine. Excuse me. And they have been rising since 2015. We have benchmarked the wage data through the actual jobs that employers pay unemployment taxes on. And so we do know overall through the end of the third quarter of 2016, which is the end of September, that wages are back on the rise. And I do want to say that the labor force participation has been increasing in Maine. It really bottomed out in 2014. So as people get back into the workforce, as they see higher wages and they see those help wanted signs, they're real enticements for people to get back in. And we see that. We have good traffic at the job fairs. So don't think that if you want to hire someone, no one's going to the job fairs because everyone has a job. There's a lot of what we call churn in the labor force, and it's due to those increasing wages that we're seeing and people who have been in a job for a while and want a better opportunity. They want better hours or shorter commute. So there's a lot of movement right now in the labor force and in the job market.
And I would just add that the businesses that I talk to are competing for workers, and it's a marketplace of sorts. And as that happens, they have to pay more to get the employees that they want. And that's good for employees. I think it gets better workers. And so they're competing with each other to try and get the people they need.
Well, we have an email that's related. This is from Bobby Garrett at Gelato Fiasco. Here at Gelato Fiasco, we've learned to open job postings in the winter, interview quickly, and compensate aggressively. We built a tracking database to make sure every resume is considered within 5 days. If a manager gets behind on prompt review, our CEO, Josh Davis, actually receives an automated notification so he can check in. Employees are the most important asset for a business. Don't let the good ones slip away.
That's exactly right. Commissioner Paquette, Commissioner of Labor Jean Paquette, came from a background in HR and ran the business, the Employment Times. And that's exactly what she says. You need to respond to people when they email you resumes. If you're not marketing yourself and you don't build your brand as an employer, it's not just building your brand for the product or service you sell. It's building your brand as an employer. And what's the word of mouth when they say, oh, I sent them my resume and then I never heard from them again? That discourages other people from following up with your business. So that model that Gelato Fiasco is using is really something that employers should be really thinking about considering. Don't wait until April to hire for June. You need to be thinking about how you're going to hire and retain those workers over the winter. Maine was a state with more jobs than people. We are now a state with more people. Excuse me, we were a state with more people than jobs, and now we are a state with more jobs than people. And it's an employee's market, and the employers have to sell their business.
Scotty on Facebook writes, how about a shuttle or three that travel up and down the coast for tourists and workers? You're all nodding. Great idea.
Yes.
Yeah, and it has been done on occasion. You know, like in Algonquin, they've actually, you know, got shuttles that they've run through to the inland parts of the state, primarily the Sanford area and stuff like that, to bring people in. Certainly Island Explorer, yeah. Which I'll let Chris speak to because he's from Bar Harbor, but it is being done. But
yeah, Island Explorer in Bar Harbor would take people all the way from Bangor down, and lots of employees along Route 3 would grab that and go into town. So it is being done on a small scale. It's a big investment. Luckily, in the Bar Harbor area, there's a great partnership between Down East Transportation, Acadia National Park, and the Island Explorer that made it feasible. But in other communities, it's tough. Transportation's expensive.
And when you look at like Blue Hill, I mean, there are a lot of like Blue Hill, Castine, a lot of places that have maybe six or eight really big tourism employers, to get people from wherever they are to those locations with that small of a base, it's, as Chris said, becomes a really expensive proposition. So we need to think outside of the box a little more on that.
Catherine on Facebook writes, as a recent college grad, I think a lot of my peers' concerns have more to do with housing costs in resort areas than anything else. And we have talked about that, part of this complicated problem. We're going to go to David calling from Cumberland. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm a co-founder of a company called CashStar, which actually started in the Great Recession. It now employs 180 people in Portland.
David, you sound very muffled. Are you on a speakerphone? We can barely hear you.
No, it's these big iPhones. Is that any better?
No, it's not any better. Could you try to call back? It would be great to hear from you. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. It's a problem with this. Everybody has a cell phone these days, and Maine doesn't always have the best cell service. We can add that to our list of complaints. But before we see if he can call back, I want to go back to something we started the conversation with, where this is a great opportunity, Julie, for a lot of people, including teenagers, people who are recently retired. What does a teenager need to have a job in Maine? How old do you have to be? How many hours are you allowed to work?
So there are certain restrictions in the labor laws for youth, and the dividing line is 14-15 and 16-17. And essentially, 14- and 15-year-olds have much fewer restrictions in the summer when school is out. So as long as school's in session, they can't work past 7 o'clock, and they have to have a permit, and they can only have one employer during the school year. But in the summer, they can have two employers. They do have to have a permit for each of those employers, but they can work later in the evening, and they are it's good to get young people into the workforce as early as possible. The data shows that the earlier you get people connected to employment, especially the 14, 15, 16-year-olds, the more attached to employment they are over their lifetime, they have less periods of unemployment, and they have greater earnings and in a higher quality of life overall because they see the value of work, and they've learned those soft skills early that make them more employable and more valuable to employers later on. So even if they can only work a few days a week in the summer, it still may be very valuable both to our economy and to the long-term development of that person as a worker.
And where does one go for a permit?
They have to go to both the school, and then the form gets sent to the Maine Department of Labor. So first you can go to the Maine Department of Labor and click on labor laws, and you'll find the information for the work permit. You can print that form off. You take that to the employer who has offered you a job. So you need to find a job first. The employer helps fills out part of the form. Then the student has the parent sign permission. So teens only work in places where they have parental permission to work. And then they take it to the superintendent. The superintendent verifies that they're in good standing. They send that to the Maine Department of Labor. It sounds excessively complex. It's not, but you have to make sure the earlier you can do this, because some superintendent offices close. And then that employer who is holding that job for you has to wait until the superintendent's office is open in order to get you on track.
There's no workaround if the superintendent's office is closed?
We have tried at the Department of Labor and in the LePage administration to have it in the summer. Just go to the bureau if the superintendent's office is closed and we haven't been able to get that change through.
Okay. Well, we do have to take another break. We're talking about summer jobs and the labor shortage. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling.
We've now seen a dramatic change in President Trump's foreign policy, airstrikes against Syria, and we've seen changes in the Senate rules to pave the way for Judge Neil Gorsuch's nomination. I'm Robert Siegel, and we'll hear what columnists E.J. Dionne and David Brooks have to say about the week's events this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered with Nora Flaherty from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
I'm John Dankosky, and coming up on Next, we'll take a road trip to a city built on manufacturing, made famous by basketball, that's betting on becoming a hub of gambling and tourism.
People, when they start talking about where they're going to go for vacation, people here in Springfield probably can't see the woods or the trees because you're too close to it. And what I'm envisioning is somebody saying, let's go to Springfield.
Remaking Springfield, Massachusetts as a casino town. Join us for Next.
The New England News Collaborative coming up in just about 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, looking at the summer labor market. In the studio with me, Greg Dougal with the Maine Innkeepers Association, Chris Fogg with the Maine Tourism Association, and Julie Rabinowitz with the Department of Labor. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Do these numbers, Julie, this more jobs than people, open doors for people that otherwise have barriers to unemployment, to employment?
Yes, it does. And there's a number of pools of workers that the Department of Labor can help employers connect with. There's a number of benefits to hiring people from these different groups. And there's a tax credit, a federal tax credit for employing people who may have a criminal background. We also offer bonding if you're making a hire who might be considered risky because of their background, that can help protect the employer and the employee. So the employee is given a chance to prove themselves. But we also have the vocational rehabilitation program at the Department of Labor. And anyone who has a disability or is collecting SSI or SSDI and is really thinking that now would be the time to get back in the workforce, we urge them to contact us through a career center or the Maine Department of Labor in general, and we can connect them with the pathway to employment.
So if someone is collecting SSI and is concerned that by getting a job they may put that in jeopardy, that's not the case?
No, there's a specific program called the Ticket to Work that's under the Federal Social Security Act that provides a pathway and a lot of guarantees. So if that something happens, say your medical condition flared up and you needed to step back from working, that your benefits will be protected. So it's a very helpful process, and we can provide a lot of guidance and benefit counseling for people who are in those situations. And we really want them to feel comfortable having those discussions without pressure that we're going to tell them you have to work or things like that. But we want to educate people and help them understand what's available to them and then all the opportunities that Maine's going to be providing to them.
I want to ask you, Greg, I asked Julie earlier about the broader picture economically, but asking you about the broader picture in the future in terms of preparing people for careers in tourism. You know, other states, Cornell University, University of New Hampshire, have hotel, restaurant, and management schools. I know that at least one candidate for governor has made a big deal about the fact that that's not the way Maine's universities at least used to be organized. What are we seeing today?
Well, and I think James brought that point up as well on the education side. One program that we have that we work with the National Restaurant Association is ProStart. And so we have 12 schools currently in Maine that actually have a ProStart program. And that's basically just to get kids interested in culinary and have them work towards careers in the culinary field. We've had competitions here in Maine for the last few years. And actually this year, the Maine team won the New England competition. So we're being very successful with that. And a few years back, working with actually Senator Roger Cates, there was a resolve that was put forth to look at creating a school of tourism and hospitality here in the state. And it was decided that it would be at the University of Southern Maine. And I have never seen anything anywhere, especially at academia, move as quickly as it did. Those conversations occurred in March and April. And that same year, there were students in the program. So there's now 100 students in that program, and they're graduating students out with a variety of different hospitality and tourism degrees, but they've really sharpened up. They have a faculty member that is specific to hotel operations, restaurant operations, management operations, accounting, which is something that we never really have had before. Also, the community colleges, Southern Maine Community College does a great job with their programs, as does Eastern Maine Community College. And one thing we haven't really talked much about today are the New Mainers. We actually were engaged in a program that worked with the Department of Labor and with the Southern Maine Community College to actually train some of the New Mainers in hospitality. And as a matter of fact, most of the people that populated the Press Hotel when they opened were from that program. So there are other outlets and other opportunities, but they pretty much all revolve around education and educating people because there are a lot of benefits in the industry.
And the department has programs available to help train these workers, help fund some of the training, and help fund if a group of employers wants to come together and identify a pool of workers who need training to get to an employment. They could go to maine.gov/maineatwork. And that initiative will connect any employer or any job seeker with the resources to do that kind of training that we did for the hospitality sector. And we can do it for virtually any industry sector. And there's wage subsidies for on-the-job training. There's a lot of things that are available.
And I would just add that the tourism industry is incredible, and it's a wonderful industry. I grew up in this industry, and it affords so much opportunity for folks. You may start coming through with a college degree, or you may start at an entry-level position. But as you work hard, you get exposed to more and more things, and you get exposed to more opportunity. And some people choose to make a career. But if you talk to anybody, they always say, well, my first job was working in a restaurant or an ice cream stand, something like that, something in the tourism industry. And it's wonderful. And if you stick with it long enough for folks, there's an opportunity for great careers.
I have an email from Jeff. You talked about the net increase of the needed workforce during the summer once non-summer workers like teachers were taken away. What if those workers could easily transfer into summer positions? I'm semi-retired and work in the technology department of a high school. I have observed that the Maine State retirement system is a barrier, not only to me teaching a class at the high school, but to teachers doing well-paid and skilled summer jobs. Basically, the current system forces an all-or-nothing choice between the Maine State Retirement System retirement funds or Social Security funds. There appears to be no middle ground. The result of that seems to be many well-educated and skilled teachers sitting on the sidelines during the summer asking themselves, why should I work during the summer if everything I pay into Social Security will be lost? I'm on the other side of the fence asking, why should I help my school by teaching one or two classes when I lose every penny that I pay into the Maine State retirement system? Could you comment upon whether we change this to make it easier for Maine to obtain skilled workers? Julie, is this an issue that your department's looking at?
Well, we're aware of it. It's not something that falls under the regulation of the Maine Department of Labor. It's more a function of the Maine state government in other departments really have jurisdiction over it. But it is an issue, and it is something that it's basically if you've earned a certain amount within the pension system, you reach the point where it's all or nothing. But it does need to be looked at because teachers and retirees from Maine state government and in the educational system are valuable skill sets who would be an incredible asset to our tourism industry in the summer.
And might I add that I think that's, should be changed. That's just my personal opinion. But I also think that there's an opportunity to make a lot of money that's being left on the table for 7.65%. So we'd still love to have those people come work with us.
We're going to go to Chris, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, I guess my question is for Julie. I'm currently a business owner, but I haven't kind of taken the leap and taking on any employees. Getting close as far as growth, and my thought of an approach was to possibly bring on somebody from a high school as an intern and change that into a summer job to maybe full employment if things work out. And I'm actually not able to really find a whole lot of information about how I can manage an intern, what my responsibilities are as an employer, or if I would actually even be an employer for an intern, if it was like maybe a stipend or a scholarship situation.
Well, that's really where we get into labor laws with the employment relationship. And if it is truly something where they are in training and perhaps earning something that ties directly to their academic course of study, then you might be able to meet the intern test. There's a trainee test, but there's a list of conditions that have to be met. Generally, from what you're describing, I would likely believe that this would be an employment relationship where you would be required to pay at least minimum wage and follow the labor laws. There's a lot of gray area around what an internship is, and that gets employers in trouble. If it's freelance work that you need done and it's truly an independent contractor relationship, you might be able to go down that road where you pay them a stipend. But if you're telling them when to show up, what to do, you're giving them assignments, you're providing the equipment that they need to do the work with, then likely you're going to have to follow the wage and hour laws.
Good luck, Chris. And we're going to move to Caroline, also calling from Portland. Hi, Caroline. Go ahead.
Hi. I was concerned with the fact that a lot of these seasonal positions are looking at students in particular who can fill the void. However, a great deal of them, their summer holidays are much shorter than the actual seasonal positions, which most of the seasonal positions that are available in Maine, their season lasts from the beginning of April till mid to late October. And a lot of these employers, they don't want to hire students because those kids are not going to be around for the duration of the season.
Sure.
And they don't want to have to train more than one person.
Sure. And the traditional season is Memorial Day to Columbus Day or Labor Day, and now it's Columbus Day, and now it's going earlier as well. And boy, this year, high school students aren't getting out till mid-June or even later. You're nodding, Greg.
Well, yeah, that's true. And quite frankly, that's okay. I mean, really, we need employees are from about mid-June to about mid-October. So what Caroline says is absolutely 100% correct. But there are many opportunities for employers to be able to, as I said earlier in the show, create a strategy that actually dovetails all of the people that can potentially work for them. Because when you look at the numbers in Maine for tourism, there's July and August, August 1st, July 2nd, and nothing close behind. So the ability to just work those 2 months for a lot of people is good. Now, there's no question that some people struggle because they lose people in September and October, and the level of business still is pretty high. But I can assure you that they would be still happy to have those individuals for the time they could.
All right, Caroline, thanks for your call. We have a tweet that and Julie, I think you're going to have to do troubleshooting on this. This is from Patrick. I attended a job fair earlier this week, and many of the employers left earlier were entirely MIA.
Well, that's a concern, and hopefully that is not the case with most job fairs in this state. And we're not the only organization that hosts job fairs either. We prefer to have them not on Friday, and I think in as this workforce situation continues to tighten, they need to be not in the middle of the day, but like 2 to 6 so that we capture a wider variety of workers and workers who currently have a job. But just to add on to what Greg just said, just as we talked about with recruiting and changing the way you recruit and when you recruit, employers also are looking at how they structure their jobs. Do they need to change the job descriptions and the duties that different people perform to be able to accommodate all these different types of workers? And it's a great opportunity to rethink the way you do things, to tie in who's available to work to make sure that you get all the jobs done that need to be done and actually expand the pool of workers available to you.
All right. Well, that's going to be our last word tonight or this afternoon. Getting ahead of myself. Thank you all for being here. Julie Rabinowitz, the Director of Policy Operations and Communication for the Department of Labor. Chris Fogg, Chief Executive Officer for the Maine Tourism Association. And Greg Dougal, Director of Government Affairs for the Maine Innkeepers Association. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.